Hi, everyone. My name is Benno Papari, and this is the Songwriters on Process podcast. Since 2010, I've interviewed over 300 songwriters about, well, their songwriting process. I don't care about favorite cities, tour stories, favorite foods, or anything like that. My goal has always been to treat songwriters the same way that we treat poets and more traditional prose writers. They are writers, plain and simple. In these interviews, we go deep into the specifics of the writing process. This is no, hey, do you start with the lyrics of the music type of interview. Now, a little bit about me. I'm not a songwriter. In fact, I've never written a song in my life. I have a PhD in English language and literature, and I'm a former academic. So as a prose writer, I enjoy exploring how my process intersects with those of songwriters. This is an intelligent conversation about writing between two writers. And that, of course, means we talk a lot about books. The site features interviews across all genres, from metal to jazz, from country to that big category known as indie. You'll find a couple of A-list actors on the site and several members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as well. Now, I select songwriters to interview who fit into one of two categories. One, do I listen to them already? And two, if I don't, would they make for a compelling and intelligent interview? You can find these interviews across all podcast platforms, as well as at songwritersonpodcast.com. Do you have an idea for an interview or a comment about the site? Hit me up at ben@songwritersonprocess.com. Thanks for listening and enjoy. And today's interview is with Duff McKagan, the bassist of Guns N' Roses. So the first time I saw Guns N' Roses was June 2nd. 1991 at Toledo Speedway in Ohio. And it was, you know, the beginning of the summer. It was hot. I remember that, but it had just rained. So it was incredibly muddy. And we were in the infield, just covered with dirt and filth and mud. But hey, it was Guns N' Roses and it was amazing. It was Guns N' Roses and Skid Row opened for them. And so this was in June of 91. And they were touring on the Use Your Illusion album, but that album did not come out for, I think, 3 months in September. So we were hearing a lot of those songs for the first time because the album had not been released yet. But what a show that was. So Duff McKagan has a new solo album out called Lighthouse, and it's fantastic. Definitely check that out. Also, his memoir, It's So Easy, and this is a few years old, is really, really good. I've read a lot of rock memoirs of varying, I guess, quality. This is really one of my favorites. He's a great writer. And he talks a lot in the memoir about the impact the literature has had on him, how when he went back to school to get his degree, he just devoured all the classics. He felt like, okay, what can I do? How can I be well-read? So he just devoured and still does all the classics. And he talks about the impact that Hemingway has on him. And in fact, the new album, Lighthouse, I think it's very strong. He mentions this very strong Cormac McCarthy influence on that solo album. So clearly you can tell he loves the sparse language, you know, Hemingway, McCarthy, the sparse language. This was a great interview. I loved listening to him talk about, we talked a lot about books. And before I forget, he mentions the book Demon Copperhead. And we did not talk about the author because I had vaguely heard of it, I think. But the author, and it won the Pulitzer Prize, which embarrasses me to no end. I didn't realize this, but it's Barbara Kingsolver wrote Demon Copperhead. And he mentions that at the end of the podcast. I'm definitely going to check that book out. He's a voracious reader, impacts his songwriting. He finds that when he reads something good, he's all constantly challenging himself. And I'm the same way. He likes to challenge himself and read new genres, new subjects. He's not comfortable reading the same type of book, the same subject. So he's constantly challenging himself there. I love what he said. I love this quirk about the process. He has to write his lyrics on a BlackBerry. An actual BlackBerry, not an iPhone. It's got to be a BlackBerry because the tactile, the actual physical keys. So he said he orders a lot of BlackBerries. He has a lot of BlackBerries laying around and he writes on his BlackBerry. because he just cannot type on a phone, but he loves that tactile sensation. Because we talked, of course, about the ritual, and this coffee is the necessary part of his ritual. Physical movement is a big part of his ritual as well. And he talks all about that in this, about himself, not just as we talked about his being a songwriter, but also a prose writer as well, and the differences between those two, and how being a prose writer makes him a more disciplined songwriter. At the end, he starts to talk about gratitude. And I tried to think about how that's connected to the songwriting process. And if you listen closely, it really is. He talks about how grateful he is to have a great family and to have a great life. And, you know, I started to think about how that's connected to the songwriting process. And he explains it really well. He says, because I'm so grateful and I'm so thankful, I don't have a burden on me when I write. I can just forget all the other shit and just write and focus on those things. And I thought, wow, I love that idea that the gratitude he has allows him to write without baggage and with a clear head. And wow, would we all love to be in that space? So, you know, I've been a Guns N' Roses fan since their first album came out. This is a big thrill for me. And Duff McKagan's a fantastic writer, prose writer, songwriter. So I hope you get some good nuggets out of this one as a whatever kind of writer that you are, a Guns N' Roses fan. And with that, I will leave you with Duff McKagan of Guns N' Roses. All right, let's get started. So thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me. I always like to start by asking, you know, are you an everyday type of writer? Now, we can talk about prose writing, songwriting, whatever you want, but I do find that what I find interesting is that when I read interviews with writers, you know, they will always say you got to write every day, you know, butt in the seat. How bad it is doesn't matter. But I find that songwriters aren't the same way. And I find that interesting that's very different. So I'm curious where you stand on that, I guess, in either type of writing that you're doing.
So you talk about just pure writers, you know, columnists or book writers or whatever. I absolutely agree that you got to put your butt down and you got to write 2,000 words and go. And and because that begets better writing and more, and it opens up things, and you that evolves your craft. In songwriting, I had a kind of a situation where I had just got my new studio. It's 2019. I recorded, I had like 5 songs left over from Tenderness, and I had a bunch of other stuff, and got in the studio, everything set up, and I started recording. I had to get down to LA to rehearse with Guns for a South American tour. We rehearsed. COVID started coming around, like, well, it's not in LA yet, you know, cool, we're fine, you know. And then we got down to Mexico City for our first show, and then that was the end. We played Mexico City and everybody rolled back. My point is, I had the studio in Seattle. I get back to there, I got my wife and my adult daughters. We're all kind of, everybody's freaked out. You know, is this going to work? Last 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6? Are we going to get it? What happened? You know, packages to your door, wipe them down, you know, all this shit. But I had my studio, and I got in there, and I finished the songs that I recorded. Thinking it was going to be 2 weeks, you know. But what happens when you're in? For me, I have my own studio now, which I know I can get those ideas out like the next day. I have Martin Favier, my producer. So I was going there every day, 5 days a week, 8 hours a day. And that creativity of writing songs and recording songs, I would go home at night and write 2 more songs. You know, maybe not all the lyrics, you know, those I'd work on. I work on my lyrics pretty rigorously. You know, I read good authors. Authors that know how to kick your ass with 3 words instead of some, you know, 3 paragraphs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? But it kind of like writing of words, my studio gave me this, just get your butt in there.
Yeah.
You have stuff to finish, but it begat more creativity. And by the end of this that period, I had 60 songs. And Lighthouse is just a kind of a 10, where I wanted to begin with the song Lighthouse. I knew that'd be a starting song. And Just Don't Know, I knew it would be an ending song for a record and for a body. And I wanted to kind of tell art of a couple different stories to get from, you know, this beacon of hope, the lighthouse, goodness. And at the end, you're wondering, with Just Don't Know, you're wondering what's next, you know, and what goes in between there. So I tried, instead of going, okay, I need a rocker and I needed this song and I needed that. It was all subject matter for me and how we got this first 10 out.
Yeah. So do you find that after you wrote your first book, did that make you a more disciplined songwriter? You know, as far as, you know, geez, I mean, that was a real challenge. You said 2,000 words every day, but do you find that being a prose writer makes you more disciplined as a songwriter in general?
Lyrically.
Yeah.
Lyrically. I don't know. I've never put the other thing together because I think music, I try to just keep in this other place.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to know technically how shit works, you know, too much. I know a lot of stuff because I've been doing this a long time, but I don't really want to know. I just want the music to be free. I'm not a trained musician. I don't want, I took lessons, bass lessons recently, just to kind of widen my range, but I didn't want to know too much about theory.
Yeah.
Don't tell me, because I don't care. And it'll fuck up my head and I'll start thinking, oh, that's you can't play a minor seven there. Yes, you can, you know? I try to be free on the actual writing the music. Melodies will come to my head. I'll hum those and put them down. But songs, I have an acoustic guitar with me at all the times, and I'll sit down. And if you sit down, it is kind of the same way. You can't write a song unless you sit down with your guitar.
Yeah.
So you got to sit down and teach yourself new ways to play. Take lessons. Like if you're me, I've taught myself to finger pick during the COVID. Like it opens up a guitar. And I know through all my songwriting times, try new tunings and do things that challenge you. And it opens up other songs. And, you know.
So I'm not a songwriter, I'm a prose writer. So here's my take on this. And I think I have a ritual and I'm not willing to stray from that. And that bothers me because, you know, like I don't write well on the road. I travel a lot for work, but there's certain chairs. Like for example, okay, I write when I'm home, I write in one chair, revise in the other. I always separate. Those two things. Because I think, you know, when I taught as a professor, I told my students, you have to separate what we call the invention process, the brainstorming from the writing process. And when they overlap, I just don't think that's a good idea. So anyway, that's one of the things that I do. But my fear with that is that it makes it easy for me to say, you know what? I'm not at home. I'm not going to write because I'm not in the place. And I don't know, I'd like to get away from that and feel more flexible with that. So how do you feel? You like that and you're not?
Prose writing, planes were some of my favorite, you know, Seattle to London flight.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You know, I would just go, okay, it's going to be 4,000 words. I'm going to go. It was like exciting for me. I also, I mean, I still have it. I still use it, my BlackBerry, because I would write full columns on my BlackBerry for the sales weekly or for ESPN and just send it in. They're like, are you sending me a column on your BlackBerry? Fuck yes, I am. I can type just like I can type. So I still, because of that, I can't go to the click phone, whatever you call that.
Yeah.
You know, the iPhone, the whatever you call that, because I can't fucking create.
Isn't that funny?
I cannot do it.
Yeah.
So I bought a bunch of BlackBerries. You know, we keep buying them because I don't want to lose that. I don't want to switch. So I do write lyrics on my BlackBerry. I write, you know, with lyric writing, sometimes I'll just free write. I got stuff. I have an iPad now, so it's not words, notes.
Yeah.
So my notes, I have just kind of free writing stuff. I wrote lyrics to a song the other day. I don't even have a song book. They're just lyrics. And I sent them to my manager in notes. So it's like in two places. I usually do that too.
Yeah.
He's my hard drive. You know what I mean? The clouds, of course, got stuff, but.
So you're not a pen and paper person when it comes to lyrics, because you and I are roughly the same age. I'm a couple years younger, you know, and I'm still a pen and paper person when it comes to jotting down short stuff. Long form, no. But do you ever use pen and paper?
No, I went to Seattle U. I went to business school in my early 30s, and my wife taught me how to type because I had to be able to type. And once I started, got that down, I really realized, I could write. I was writing papers in college on pen and paper. I don't know, some big papers that I had to write. Philosophy papers. You know, it had to be the 20 pages long. Some shit, you know. And I remember writing it. At some point, I made that switch. And maybe when I started writing for the Seattle Weekly or whatever. And I'm so comfortable on my computer. That's where I can create, weirdly enough.
Yeah.
That's where I can create. And obviously for lyric writing, that immediate edit without erasing shit or crossing shit out, it doesn't look as messy. You know, so that's a little cleaner for me, and I'll write something. In my free writing prose that I have for lyrics, there's some real garbage in there. Oh my God, I can't believe I wrote that sentence.
Right, oh yeah.
You know, that's gone. But, you know, the hacking down process of lyrics, and I'll have something that I think's really kind of gorgeous and explanatory, a lyric. And then the next thing I'll go, that is fucking, oh no, that's little, you know, that's corny, and you know, or whatever. We all go through that stuff.
Yeah.
But the chopping down process for me is like your editing chair, I guess.
Yeah.
I just I love it. I love the mystery of, because the story's in there.
Yeah.
And how do you sharpen that story? So it can say a couple things. The intent might be plain in front of you, or it might be hidden in this other thing. And how do you do that? And can you have three words in there that are going to kill the listener?
Yeah.
You know, just make them weep or make them jump or whatever. And I look for that.
So here's my editing trick. I find that when I finish something in the morning and I look at it later that day, mm-hmm. it's still too precious. I can't cut anything because it's too close to me. But here's what I noticed about myself. If I finish something at night, wake up the next morning, I cut like it's no problem. I don't know what it is about sleep, but there's something about, and it's the same amount of time, 8-10 hours, whatever. But I wake up the next morning, there's something about, I think, oh my God, I don't need that. But if I had done it that same day, isn't that, I don't know. I found
But what's your coffee situation in the morning?
That's true. I do drink. That's the first thing I do is I drink a couple cups, but I don't know that it's the coffee. It could be, but I think it's more just your mind has set it aside and there's something going on up there. But it's amazing the difference. And so I use that actively as a part of my process, and it lessens my anxiety when it comes to, oh, I've got to get rid of this stuff.
Morning coffee is a huge part of my process.
Yeah.
Because I can fucking build a skyscraper. You know, I make 2 cups of the strongest coffee ever drank. And lemon water before and after, by the way. But I can be brutal on my writing on coffee. That's when I can chop.
So are you chopping words or phrases? Kind of, I mean, everything. You mentioned that. You said chop a lot. So I love that. So what do you?
Yeah.
What are you chopping? Yeah. For me, it's prepositions. Prepositions, when I see the word of, to, at, you know, when I ever have to get rid of words, I will go through and search for prepositions, and those are always places I can get rid of stuff.
Right. Right. Well, I don't know what I look for. I look, you know, cause I'm trying to sing a lyric, and then you could change up your cadence of a third line.
Yeah.
A verse. So that can add up fucking, if you can change the cadence, you can add or subtract one of those words, a word. Oh my God. You know, it's like it opens the whole thing up. So I check cadence and stuff. And if it doesn't work with cadence, you got to start chopping a word, and you got to, you know, sometimes syllables, like,
yeah,
find a new word.
Yeah.
You got to, I can't rhyme with metastasize. You know, I think, but you know what I mean? I don't know. I just start chopping, and I don't look for anything specific. Mm-hmm. I'm singing, I'm playing my guitar. I've got, you know, my notes right there, and I'm singing it. We'll print them out. We'll print them out. And then I do with pen and paper sometimes. When I think I'm done, even like chopping, and then we print it out, and like, I'm not done chopping, and I got to do this. But I don't have a system for how I chop it. It's really song specific.
That's why I'd always tell, for me at least, the best revision process involves getting as far away from my writing process as I can. So if I type on the computer, I'll always print out the documents to revise. Like, whatever the opposite of the writing process, the revising is different. So printing out, you know, read all those kind of tricks to not make it look like the writing process.
Right. Right. No, I totally understand all of that.
Yeah.
Sure. And I know I have a bunch of little weird hacks, you know, that push me. I know. And sitting down with your guitar every day, you're not going to, I said it before, but again, you're not going to write a song if you're not sitting down with your guitar.
Yeah.
And start playing. You got to start playing.
Yeah.
And if you have a thing that says, you know, a lyric that's this guy, you know, it's gray today, you know, and that fits in your thing. Okay, write a song around that. What's that mean to you? You know,
yeah.
And do that. If you're an aspiring songwriter or a songwriter, just do that. Just do that. It might be the worst song you've ever written. It was kind of the worst lyric I've ever come up with, but you know,
right.
Man, I don't know. And then, and again, that crappy song you might start into, might give you an idea for another song, and it just kind of falls out, you know, like to be a creative songs, it falls out, but you have to coerce, you know, you have to be there to receive.
Yeah,
whatever this thing is that's coming to you, and you're making shit up out of thin air, which is you know, ridiculous, but it's so rewarding. Like when you get something that you dig, and I like to write songs that sound good to me. You know, I've always been that way. I like to have truth in the song, and you know, like to have chords that are not simple. I don't mean simple. I just mean that you don't have to get a bunch of riffs and stuff. Some bands do. I mean, my Guns N' Roses, we have a ton of killer riffs. But when I write songs, I like to have this kind of, Susan and I have this radio, my wife and I have this radio.
Yeah, show, of course.
Three Chords and the Truth.
Yeah,
and
I love it.
Really, that's like a punk rock ethic thing, and I saw The Clash in 79, and that changed kind of everything for me. And before London Calling, you know, I got to see that tour.
Yeah.
So really, like, not that all my songs are three chord songs, but you understand. I like the message and the truth of the intent of the whole song, musically and lyrically. When I get to something that I like both of those, I'm satisfied, and I know it's like such cool. You record it and you do all the stuff and you listen to it and like, man, this is came out of thin air. This is really cool. You know?
Yeah. So I know I'm a big runner. I know you love to exercise. So I've written about this, articles about this. There's about the very, and you'll love this, there's a very clear link between aerobic exercise and the immediate impact on higher order thinking and creativity. So I've written about this. I wrote about this in the Washington Post about 5 years ago. So there's a chemical in the brain called brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And this is not like snake oil science. It's legit because they put people on a treadmill in the labs and given them for 20 minutes at 60% max heart rate, which is not much more than a moderate walk. Then after those 20 minutes, give them a battery of tests. And those people always score higher than people who didn't exercise. So that benefit lasts for about 90 minutes post-exercise. And the parameters are 30
That's
minutes.
That's what I should do. My New York Times Sunday crossword is right after my hard cardio.
I'm telling you, or even so. Well, and this is absolutely. So 30 minutes at 60% max heart rate. So the good news is, it's not dose responsive. So 60 minutes isn't twice as good as 30 minutes, and 90% heart rate isn't better than 60%. The only caveat is that it's got to be an exercise that doesn't involve higher order thinking. So like walking in downtown New York City isn't going to be as effective as, you know, walking in the woods. Treadmills aren't effective as bikes because in a treadmill, there's still part of your brain that's focusing on balance. There is a book called The Friendship, which was written. It's about the friendship between Wordsworth and Coleridge, the two Romantic poets. And they estimate Wordsworth walked about 100,000 miles in his lifetime. He composed all of his poems on walks, and he wouldn't come back. He'd edit them in his mind, wouldn't come back until he was finished. But songwriters tell me all the time they get ideas running, you know, by, I mean, actual song ideas. So anyway, a long way to say, I know you're a big fitness person, but does that happen a lot? I guess two-parter, does it happen a lot? Or like when I'm in a rut, that's when I go for a walk and I find that the ideas kind of get loosened up in there.
Yeah. I wrote the lyrics to Just Don't Know. Actually walking my dog at night. Funny you should say walking. It was kind of that same. I didn't have my phone with me, so I couldn't write it down. And it was, the stars were out, and we're right by Lake Washington. So I had the melody of the song in my head, and I could just say, I just don't know what I'm going to write. I just don't know. And I looked up, and I looked at the stars, and I said, the ethers ever glow.
Nice.
What the fuck is that? And then I looked at the water and it's like, and the ocean's under tow. I just don't know. And it just was this thing. And the rest of the lyrics came. I had to pick up my dog. She just wanted to walk. And the poor thing, I had to pick her up. And because I'm not great at, you know, I use so many other tools. I don't store, unless I go on tour, and then I have to store all the lyrics in my head. But that's a whole nother process. So ran home and wrote those lyrics down very quickly.
Yeah. Do you find that afterwards you exercise? Or is that like a fruitful time for you?
Yes, always. Yeah. Absolutely. After exercise. So my thing is coffee, that first burst of creativity after coffee. And then I'll get in the gym. I stopped running. My knees. Yeah. Peloton. I'm hard. You know, I go kind of beast mode on my cardio always. So it's Peloton. It's elliptical. I like the recumbent bikes in the gyms because it's just a little easier on my knees. My knees aren't that screwed, but you know, I play these 3.5 hour shows a night, so I'm trying to just save shit as much as I can. A lot of push-ups and you know, jumping rope and like 3 minute bursts, like you're in the ring fighting, that kind of thing, training. And it really sharpens me.
Yeah.
Very sharp. And I meditate in there. I do my little work inside my head and I come out of that going, okay. And that's when I go straight to the studio in Seattle and I'm ready. I'm raring. Martin's always ready for me.
So that's your ritual.
Yeah. So like, yeah. Oh, what are we doing?
Right. The other thing that I hear a lot is the songwriters get ideas through monotonous activities. You know, Mark Morton told me gardening. I've heard vacuuming, doing the, Agatha Christie said the best time to write a book is when you're doing the dishes.
And I love doing the dishes. I was just going to say, I'm the dishes guy.
But there's something about the monotony where an activity that requires no brain power that lets those unconscious ideas bubble to the top.
I don't know. No, not in my.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I do many mundane things. And they're just mundane things. I like doing the dishes, though.
So is that? That's so funny. I don't. What it is about the dishes? But you don't. Do you find that that's like a time to kind of just let your mind? Like I'm sure that has some impact on it because it strength maybe freshens you for later on creativity, right?
It could very well. There must be a reason I like doing it. I like a clean kitchen. You know, I worked in restaurants as a teenager. As we all did, probably.
Yes.
And, you know, I had good bosses and clean kitchens. And so, you know, raising up two little daughter girls and your wife and there's just shit everywhere. I'm like, nope, this will not pass.
Right.
I became the dishes guy. And it kind of just reminds me of being a dad. That's all.
So do you have just hundreds of discarded song ideas somewhere that you reach back to if you find that you're in a rut and you kind of go back and maybe something you didn't like a week, a month, a year ago, all of a sudden it has legs, you know, with that time, that distance.
I have a lot of files because you can record things in a GarageBand on your computer, you know, your iPad or your computer. And I have so many GarageBands. I call them my shitty demos. My shitty demos are just me playing record, pushing record, and playing the... And that's verse. And the chorus will go... That's my demo. And there might be a couple of words in there, too. Like, and, you know, you listen back to some of that stuff. It's like, what the fuck was I thinking? But again, you'll listen to it back a year later and go, oh, fuck. You're back in that... where you were when you wrote it.
Yeah.
Oh, this is what I was trying to get at, you know?
Yeah.
So for sure, I kind of just move forward. I do have a backlog of a ton of shit that I should probably get back to at some point. But it's a very creative time for me and I'm not going to question why.
Yeah.
It just is.
So I've got a few quotes from writers here that I'd love your perspective on as a songwriter.
Great.
This is the one that songwriters love, and it is from the novelist E.L. Doctorow. And he says, and I'll repeat this, he says, writing is like driving at night in the fog. You can only see as far as your headlights, but you can make the whole trip that way.
Yeah. I get it. I mean, that's right, because you're just picking your way through it. You're picking your way through, right? You might have this great idea, and a bunch of words come out, and then... you know, and then there's the fog, you know, it's just enough, you know, and that's, I love that.
To me, I see it as I don't have any right knowing what something's supposed to look like when I start, you know.
Sure. You have, but sometimes you have these great ideas, this grand theme, your theme, even if you do have a theme though, you gotta illuminate it. And it's not going to illuminate all at once. It's like the headlights in the fog, you know. It's not going to illuminate itself. Not going to ride itself, you know.
That's true. Yeah. All right. Allen Ginsberg said, to gain your own voice, you have to forget about having it heard. To gain your own voice, you have to forget about having it heard. How important is that as a songwriter?
Yeah, I get out of the way. I get out of my own way when I write songs. And there's sometimes when it's too much of my voice, no lyric, and that's when I start chopping.
Hmm.
You know, there's a song on Lighthouse, the one I just actually said the chorus idea to, Just Don't Know. It's one of the rare times you're going to hear in a lyric of mine where I expose something about my childhood. You know, people call it childhood trauma. I think it's just bullshit we all go through, you know, parents divorce and stuff.
Yeah.
And I put that in there, but, you know, I think in a poetic way, but I was like, ooh, is this too much? I don't, because it's my, too much my, me, my, my.
Yeah.
I hate that, you know? I'd rather we, or I'd never go you, you know? Never you. It's we or this or something, but I try to take the me, me. Out of this, you know, if I write a song for my wife, which I do a lot because I love her to fucking death, I'll put me in there because I'm telling her something.
Yeah.
But try to take my voice out of it. So if I do have a voice, I know I do as a columnist.
Yeah.
For sure. I know I do as a book writer. I'm a conversational book writer. You're going to hear me talking. I somehow found a way to write that did that. You know, it's from writing a million columns, you know, that you develop your style. Mm-hmm. I haven't looked at my like first 10 columns. They're probably awful. You know, I'm sure they're awful. But I was writing a lot because I went to a Jesuit school, you know, business school. In Jesuit school, you have to write a shit ton.
Yeah.
You know? So, and I have some great English professors. I had a visiting poet as my English, whatever it was, 210, you know, and he'd read Shakespeare and be like, oh, he was a visiting poet, Sam Green.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
All right, before we talk about our favorite authors, one more quote from H.L. Mencken. The value of writing seems to be inversely proportional to the ease of writing. Whatever flows freely and bubblingly turns out to be sorry stuff a week later. So some songwriters tell me they don't trust the stuff that comes too quickly. I'd love to know your take on that. Do you trust that stuff that just happens?
You know, Not always. There was a song I wrote that came out in May. Listen to me. There's a song that I was able to be the vessel for, and I was having a panic attack. And this is the moment I found out I did acoustic guitar and writing a song could get me out of a panic attack. And I wrote this is the song that's going to save my life, you know. And I tried Lexapro and what else, I don't know. Still, they can't agree. And I wrote this fucking, all the lyrics and the song. And I was done, and I was out of my panic attack, sweaty, my shirt off, all this shit. And I got on my my garage band, and I recorded that, and I wrote the lyrics down. And that one time, that's one of the times that the lyric was like, I wouldn't change a word. But I was in an altered state. I was in a panic attack.
Yeah.
Where your fight or flight is fucking on fire, you know? So maybe that altered state pre-carved the lyrics for me. They were super to the point. I had no time to get it flowery.
Yeah. You know?
I was writing a song just so I could breathe again.
Yeah.
So, and if you know your readers or whoever have panic, I still know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know? So, but yes, there are definitely times I told you where I free write or write shit and like, whoa, that's really good, man. Fuck yeah, that came so easy. You come back, you know, a few days later, like, oh, what is this garbage?
Right. So let's talk writers. You mentioned Cormac McCarthy. I do find that I'm trying to think of the list. There's like three or four authors that are the default for songwriters. Cormac McCarthy, Kurt Vonnegut, Bukowski.
Sure.
Those are probably the big three.
I'm not going to write though. I drank and I pissed and then I shit and then I threw up.
Right.
On her back.
So I have another one. Have you ever read?
I love Bukowski, but it's like, you can take so much. You can take so much. You're right. Okay. You know.
Yeah. There's a guy named Brees DJ Pancake. And that I'll put it in the chat afterwards. Brees DJ Pancake. It's an awkward sounding name. But here's his story. He went to UVA, wrote one book of short stories. He was heralded as the next great American writer. One book of short stories. They called him the Hillbilly Hemingway because he was from West Virginia. So he wrote with that Hemingway spare language, but for the Appalachians. It was a voice. Wrote one book and then committed suicide. And this was in the 80s, I think. And there was an article about him in The New Yorker about 10 years ago. But if you should really, I was turned on him by songwriters, actually. I'd never heard of him until a lot of songwriters. But one book of short stories, that's it. And it's fucking amazing. You're a Hemingway fan.
You'll send me his name?
Yep, yeah, yeah.
I'm reading a Demon Copperhead right now. You heard of that book?
No, what is that?
It's a novel, won a Pulitzer Prize.
I should know this.
Demon Copperhead. Yeah, no, the woman who, my book club is the woman that colors my hair. She's about my age, and her and I like the same kind of books, and we trade back and forth. So she said, read Demon Copperhead. So read on my Kindle, so I don't know how far through I am the book. But my point is, the author, the writing is a really cool and unique style, which I appreciate. The use of punctuation is spare. You know, I like that kind of stuff. Hemingway, when I got sober and really started reading, I'm like, I've got to catch up. I have to catch up. So I got to read all the classics.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And reading Hemingway, it was like, oh, you know, the way he could make that run on sentence and it would get your heart fucking racing. Yeah. Like, oh man, this guy's fucking, I really like Hemingway, F. Scott Fitzgerald, the American classic writers. Cormac, when I stumbled onto The Road, was the first book I read ahead. All right. And I was writing a lot. He kicked my ass. I'm like, just took Hemingway and just went another.
Yeah.
For me, both great writers, not comparing them to Hemingway or anything like that. I get a lot of ideas. I read a lot of history.
Yeah.
I read a lot of big themes. Like I just read a book about the 400-year history of immigration to the Lower East Side.
Wow.
So you imagine how involved that book is. And it's a really thorough, really well-written. I bought it at the Tenement Museum in New York. It's called City of Dreams. And so I'll take these stories I read about, I don't know, the Irish Protestants and Irish Catholics fighting each other in, you know, New York City and Five Points and the pogroms that the fucking, you know, Jews had to come through for Russia and all these big, huge ideas really influenced my songwriting. Having knowledge, you know, not just reading one book about something, maybe read a few so you have a full, maybe a wider breadth of what that theme is. Or that situation, or what, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Don't read one book and go, I know it all now. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, when I read your memoir, what stood out to me was you talked about how physically you wanted. One thing I thought of was you talked a lot about physically, you challenged yourself, like almost breaking your body down. And I'm curious if you do that when you read, you challenge yourself. Like I've never read Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace, but I feel like. You know, songwriters, it's not that they finish it, it's how far they got before they quit. And, you know, I that seems to be kind of the bragging point. So right. I mean, admittedly, I think I need to challenge myself and read outside of the genres that I normally read. So I'm curious, because you do that physically, at least in your memoir, do you consciously, when you read, try to say, I need to really step out and read something different, whether it's a style, genre, author, thing like that? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I just read this. I don't usually do this. I don't know if you can see this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know this?
I've heard of it, yeah.
Snarl. It's a short novella. I don't read novellas, but my friend gave it to me. He's like, you're going to love it. And the way he said it, I'm like, okay. And John Bowden is the author's name. Really cool. American. I love that American style. I love British writers, don't get me wrong. A good American writer, a great American writer. There's just, you know what it is about American writing that I like so much. Maybe, I don't know. It was Hemingway that turned me on to it. Cormac McCarthy refined it all, but I can tell people that read that stuff and write and make it their own. I really appreciate it.
When you read, when I was a kid, I remember, I watched football all day. My friends and I would watch football. Then when we're done watching football, we'd go play football. So do you find that after you read, does that motivate you immediately? Have you ever been like, oh my God, I want to start writing after I just read?
When I wrote my books, I would always be reading a good author.
Yeah.
At the time. Mostly Cormac, but not singularly Cormac, but I went through the whole catalog, the Blood Meridian, everything. And if you're writing, you're reading that at night, you're writing the next day, you have this fucking benchmark.
Yeah.
You're not going to, I like having benchmarks. Like I play with really good players. I mean, Slash is the fucking, arguably the best guitar. To me, he's the best guitar player in the world. I've seen him and Axel's the fucking master,
Yeah.
Master. We play 3.5 hour shows. I see how he prepares and changes his body to get like certain notes. And so these are benchmarks for me. So when I go to my studio, I've learned so much from Axel singing that I can't sing like him. I can't write like Cormac. I can't sing like Axel, but I got high watermarks to aim for. And Slash has taught me so much about guitar playing that high watermark. So writing, yes, I do. I absolutely read while I'm writing. Good authors. I don't read any fucking trash.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't read trash anyhow, but sometimes there's a good rock biography. He's like, okay, let me just get through this really quick.
Right. You try to read every day. I make it a point. I mean, fortunately, it doesn't happen all the time, but I do make it a point, set aside time to read every day.
I can only go to sleep if I read. So I read every night. Like I said, I'm on that book, Demon Copperhead, right now.
Yeah.
I read every night. And mm-hmm. I do. I have New York Times apps. So I do Wordle every morning. I do connections. I do the mini crossword, the timed mini. I have this little group that we're all in the same WhatsApp, and Dan Jones, the historian, is in it. And that motherfucker, he gets the mini crossword in like 29 seconds.
It's amazing. I know, it's sick.
But I 29 seconds, I can't even type that fast, dude.
Yeah.
And then I always have a Sunday New York Times crossword going. And I think this stuff's so good just for your brain. It's keeps my brain clicking. It's nerdy. Who gives a fuck? I love that kind of stuff. I'm really, to be honest with you, I live in this fucking state of like grace, like gratefulness, grateful. I'm grateful. Still, I'm grateful to be sober every day. I'm grateful that, I met this woman and I was sober 2 years to meet her. I didn't go into her when I wasn't prepared to handle what was capable, what I wanted. And she made my life amazing and pushed me. She pushes me. I'm not the fucking, she pushes me. I always want to impress her, I find. And having our daughters I should have been dead. I shouldn't have been able to enjoy any of this stuff.
Yeah.
And I have it all. Been able to go to Seattle U. What the fuck? I'm in business school and I'm writing papers and I'm getting A's. I'm getting a 4-point. I'm getting a president's list. Just because I want to learn. I was so hungry for knowledge. I wasn't trying to get good grades. Didn't want my voice to be heard. I just but I wanted to know everything. And that thirst of for life and in martial arts and fucking just going for it, you know, and even working out, like that's when I say go carve my own thing when I'm doing my cardio. That's what I do. I'm being grateful and I'm carving my life. What can I do today to do it? And I tell this person I love them, that, you know, I'm going to make a call after this and go, you know. So I think being in a really fortunate place to be kind of grateful and I recognize it. It's not like, oh, yeah, it's good. I've been sober for 29 years. I'm good. You know, no, man. I got a great marriage. That makes me, when I go into a studio, my studio, I don't have some other bullshit weighing me down. You know, I know other relationships, I've, you know, other people just beats them down. You know, when people were getting divorced during COVID, like 20 years, you'd hear about that.
Yeah.
You know, Susan and I were like, Jesus, we've been through a lot together. And we're not, now we're in a worldwide pandemic together. We're just closer. Why would somebody get divorced now? You know?
Yeah.
Now. But I guess everybody said, well, like, we're cool, right? You know? but to be in a good place, I work very hard, you know, on the road. It's not for everyone. To keep a marriage and a family together through all that, especially when you're younger. Now we're empty nesters. So Susan and I have the fucking best time on the road. But you know, to have what I have and be able to go in the studio and not have some fucking weights there and on your chest. And I could just create. I'm fucking Martin Fivier, my producer, is the most lovely fucking gentleman, you know, and it's just awesome.
Yeah.
Things are great. You know, I think I'm sick from the sand in the desert Friday night. So much fine sand. Like, I swear, I didn't work out today. That'll tell you something.
Right.
So I got that. But it's okay. You know, I can be sick in Sacramento, away from everybody, but still know that they're there for me. And, you know, my life's pretty good. It's not always fucking amazing. Your life just can kick you in the ass sometimes, but I know I have what I have, and that keeps me. If that sounds too corny, whatever.
I love it. It's great.
And that's it for today's episode. Check back in a couple of weeks for a new episode. I do try to post these every 2 weeks, sometimes with more frequency, sometimes with less. A lot of that depends on my work commitments, my family commitments, and also when artists can talk to me. It's not easy to get these interviews. Speaking of interviews, did you know this is a relatively new podcast? I only started podcasting about a year ago. Well, depending on when you're listening to this, I should say 2022, but from 2010 to 2022, all of my interviews were transcribed and they are all there archived for you to go down that deep rabbit hole. So if you go to songwritersonpodcast.com and click on from the archives in the top, at the top, you'll see all of those transcribed interviews. I think there's over 200. So go down that rabbit hole. There's a lot of great interviews there. You'll find all of those there. Again, the podcast itself is relatively recent. So there's a lot of reading you need to be catching up on with those old interviews. Speaking of interviews, if you have suggestions for interview subjects or want to comment or complain, anything like that, email me at ben@songwritersonprocess.com. That's ben@songwritersonprocess.com. And that's it for today's episode. This wraps it up. Thank you very much for listening and have a good one.